Welcome to Top of the Game with Javier Sade, where we talk to amazing people that are shaping the world. These lightning round talks explore what makes remarkable leaders tick. Thinkers and doers, pushing humankind forward and at the top of their game. Impactful insights, global perspectives, valuable wisdom you can use every day in your life and work. This is Top of the Game. Enjoy today's episode. Here's Javier.
Javier Gutierrez is the first Latino president CEO in the National Hockey League and leads the Arizona Coyotes. He previously served as managing director at Clear Lake Capital Group, a leading private investment firm that manages $70 billion in assets. That was preceded by being president and chief investment officer at Morello Group and a professional at Phoenix Realty Group, Latham & Watkins, and the NFL. He also co-founded Suma Wealth. Javier was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, and relocated to San Jose. He received degrees from Harvard College and Stanford Law School, and for two decades has built a career in business, investment, and finance. He serves or has served on multiple boards and advisory councils that include the Board of Directors of the Commercial Bank of California, the Board of Directors and Investment Committee at the Arizona Community Foundation, the Hispanic Scholarship Fund, the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the Committee on Small and Emerging Companies at the SEC. It's a remarkable story. Javier is a close friend and has something to teach us all about the power of hard work, seizing opportunity, grit, resilience, and serendipity. A dedicated human being who sees where the puck is going. Enjoy the conversation. Javier Gutierrez, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Javier, my tocayo, and appreciate you having me on.
Well, Happy New Year, my brother. The only Latino running a major sports team in America with an amazing story that I know because we're good friends and we have the same name, even though yours is spelled incorrectly. But be that as it may, can you tell the listeners about kind of your early years trajectory path?
It starts by being an immigrant. You know, I was an immigrant from Mexico. I was born in Guadalajara. I came at the age of five, first to Los Angeles, and we'll circle back as to the impact that had in terms of my current role. But really, we moved up to the Bay Area, and I grew up in San Jose. And I saw my elementary school built out of an orange grove, it was an incredible place to grow up. And actually, the very well-known economist from Harvard, Ross Chetty, did the analysis and actually showed that in the early 90s, in 1990 to be specific, San Jose was the number one city in the country for socioeconomic mobility. And why? You know, it was affordable housing. It was, you know, great public schools. It was a very vibrant middle class in terms of workforce, and also a very vibrant immigrant community, which was really dispersed. And that was my experience. And I had a great educational opportunity. My parents valued education, even though my mother graduated from junior high and my dad just from high school. And I'm the oldest of four, but we all, you know, we're very, very much inculcated in terms of education being the most important things in our lives and the one thing that no one could ever take away from you. And so I had the great fortune of going to actually the oldest high school in California. It's an all-boys Jesuit high school right in the middle of downtown San Jose called Bellarmine College Preparatory. It's a Jesuit high school. And that was really a transformative experience for me. I had literally friends of mine who were third, fourth, fifth generation in San Francisco to the sons and nephews of, you know, venture capitalists and tech CEOs in the peninsula, all the way down to farmers, you know, friends of mine who would show up at school in tractors. And it was an incredible experience for me. And obviously also the Jesuit education, which really instilled in me something that really has driven not only my professional, but certainly my personal life, which is this ethos of being a man for others, of having not only the opportunity and the resources, but really the obligation to make a difference in the world around us. But they really opened a significant amount of doors for me. And as you know, from there, moved on to attend Harvard, where you know, I went, quite frankly, thinking I would make a difference in the world through government and through public office. And in fact, my very first night at Harvard, I dropped my bags. My roommate, who had gone to Roxbury Latin, which is actually the oldest high school in the country, there in Boston, I dropped my bags. I go down to the Kennedy School and pizza dinner with Michael Dukakis. And I came home. I called my
parents. Was he wearing the helmet? Remember that really ill-fated commercial, the helmet thing? Remember that?
No, but I will tell you what I told my parents. Right there, I was, and I thought two things. Number one, Michael Dukakis was short.
So he was short.
That was the first thing I thought. And The second is like, what an incredible journey! What an incredible country, right? That an immigrant, an undocumented immigrant. There I was, I'm an 18-year-old, my first night at Harvard, and I'm having pizza dinner with someone who ran for president.
It's crazy, you know, you and I, besides sharing a name, I also went through a Jesuit education. This issue of community service is, they know how to educate people, let's put it that way, all around. Your path to Harvard, then you went to Stanford Law. I'm gonna skip, for the listeners, his bio is gonna be in the full amazing bio is going to be in the notes. Went to Stanford Law, and then you've done a bunch of stuff up until the amazing role you have now, running the NHL hockey team in Arizona. But I want to kind of double click on one of your roles with another common friend we have, Jose Feliciano. You've been influencing people and touching people, but through the levers of influence via capital. And you traded that capital for what you're doing now with sports. So I want you to do something that I've heard you do before, which is tie the move from one of the largest private equity firms in the world to sports.
Sure. So prior to being in this role, I was a managing director with Clear Lake Capital, which is obviously one of the most successful and largest private equity firms in the world.
Yep.
Founded by Jose Feliciano, who actually was my roommate at Stanford. Mm-hmm. We knew each other prior to that when he was at Princeton. And, you know, I went to him after running the family office, the investment arm for Alex Morello, the owner of the Coyotes, and I went to Jose really with a plan in mind to start a smaller investment vehicle targeting small businesses, something that you know quite well, Javier.
I remember we talked about it when I ran the thing. Yep.
Exactly. And Jose then convinced me to be at Clear Lake to help them, you know, expand what they are about in terms of beyond just private equity. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 3 years, and we looked at a number of new strategies, right? Infrastructure and debt and real estate and public equities and, you know, to really continue to increase the sort of portfolio of strategies that Clear Lake was about.
Yep.
And then Alex Morello bought this team. Bought the Coyotes, and he had been looking at sports, but had really been focused on the NBA when I worked alongside him for almost 7.5 years.
When did he buy it? Remind the listeners.
Summer of 2019.
So he buys it, and then he calls you and says, I got to do something.
He buys it. He calls me. He says, I want you to come, and you know, you're my friend. And we were still business partners. We owned the largest Latino-owned bank in California together. And
you're on the board of that bank.
And I'm on the board of that. So, you know, I was happy for him. I was happy for his family. He became the first Latino owner, majority owner in the history of the National Hockey League. And
amazing.
Really one of the very few Latino majority owners in all of professional sports.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, what an accomplishment for his own, you know, journey. And I came, and, you know, summers in Arizona are a little bit hot. And we had this amazing press conference and closing, and it was such a big deal. And then we had dinner, celebration dinner, and he started asking me what I thought about Arizona. And I knew the direction he was going. I was like, yeah, I'm really not that interested. And And then in February of 2020, and that's kind of a very important, you know, to point out when.
COVID. Are you not going to say the word COVID, are you?
Yes.
God damn it.
So okay, February of 2020, he calls me and he says, Javier, you need to do this. You need to do this. And I tell him, I say, okay, so let's understand the setting, right? I'm in my office at Clear Lake, which
Santa Monica.
Yeah, overlooks the beach in Santa Monica, California.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there really down the hall from one of my best friends, managing at that point a little bit under $40 billion.
Yeah.
And I have this this friend of mine who's on the phone saying I needed to uproot my family and I need to go run a hockey team in the middle of the Arizona desert.
In COVID.
And well, COVID hadn't yet, you know, it had started, but it really, you know, hadn't stopped the world yet.
Yeah.
And I said, why? And he says, listen, I want to win and I want to bring a Stanley Cup and I'm going to be focused on that. However, the end of the year, the end of the season, there's always only one winner, only one team that can kiss the Stanley Cup and put their name on it.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, what are you going to stand for if you're not the person that wins it? And again, we're going to focus on winning it, but we need to stand for something more than that. And he says, well, what I really want to be is I want to be an organization that's beloved, right? That is really seen as the partner everybody wants to be aligned with and the brand that everybody wants to be associated with. And really the way to do that is not just winning. It's really to do for others, to make a difference in their lives, to make an impact in that community. And he says, and I really trust you to be that person to do that for me and my family and this organization. But this idea that sports has this incredible voice and this, you know, very powerful platform to make an impact, to make a difference. And Alex knew. Alex, you know, said, listen, you believe in the ethos of being a man for others, going back to your Jesuit education.
Javier, let me stop you for a second. There's so much to unpack there, but winning is not everything. I mean, I'm a fan of the Cubs, and it took 108 years, and yet the Cubs is one of the most valuable franchises because of this connectivity with the fandom. And then the real business of sports is pretty it's relatively easy to understand the revenue streams, but very difficult to thread together. So he hit you in a nerve that only he and very few people know how to hit, which is this, it's a platform for a bigger impact, which is what grabbed you. Okay. Right. I'm getting it. So then you grab the thing, and what is that platform? Can you describe the platform to the listeners?
Sure. Yeah. Well, listen, it grabbed me. And the vision that I have been executing on here has been that vision of impact. Mm-hmm. Everything we do, and I've said this on a couple of occasions, the concentric circle around which everything we do is impact. Think about what we can do on the ice, right? Mm-hmm. And think about what we can do as a business, and think about what we can do as an agent for change, for improvement. And what's interesting is, yes, I said yes, COVID stops the world. I have to come change careers and move with my wife, Jerrica, my son, Javi, in the middle of the summer, in the middle of COVID, to Arizona. And yet what I saw immediately was the power of sports to make that difference. You know, COVID showed the power of sports first to commerce. When sports shut down, the economic impact to communities, we saw it. Right. Huge. We had vendors, we have supply chains, we had districts, we had restaurants, we had, you know, this real ripple effect that showed the power of sports to commerce. Second to culture. Mm-hmm. I often point out most people, regular people, fans, not fans of sports, they realize that COVID was this really big thing when sports stopped. It really was this cultural, you know, moment that sports was really at the kind of the tip of the spear, saying something's going on very big on this health issue, but that everybody needs to be aware. And it again highlighted and underscored the impact of sports. And finally, also to community. In COVID, towards the end, we became one of the first teams to bring people back into an indoor arena. And we did all these things that now are part of our experience, right? Cashless payments, testing, social distancing. You know, we also became a facility where we had a blood drive, a food drive, a clothing drive. We did a trunk or treat, right? And again, showed the convening power of sports. You know, I have a quote that's in my office that was there before, and I kept it, you know, from Nelson Mandela, which is a very famous quote, where that sports has the power to change the world, right? Has the power to inspire, to unite people in a way that little else does. And it speaks to the youth in a language they understand. It is this incredibly impactful thing that, again, was highlighted by COVID, but has continued. And so then the question became, not only is that the right, you know, sort of vision, but then what I've also been very focused on is, okay, so how do you also monetize that? Not only is it the right thing to do, it's also the right business decision. Mm-hmm. And what's been fascinating to me has been the ability to, you know, position us as a platform that partners, whether they're business partners or media partners or community partners, that they utilize to continue their community leadership and their and exponentialize their community impact. And I've been able to monetize that. I have the one of the largest home helmet sponsorships in the NHL because of goodwill. And you know, they saw it, and the CEO has said this. The team wasn't winning. Their regional sports network was in bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And due to a lot of factors, we ended up playing in the smallest facility in the history of the National Hockey League. But to us, they were exactly the partner we wanted because of their positioning, their focus, and their ability to help us position and focus ourselves on community impact.
You're putting it into practice. I know you've deployed and dispensed with a lot of this stuff, but it's an ongoing process. And I personally look forward to seeing how it continues to unfold. The last section of this program, I can and have gone on for days with you, Javier, but I want to close it with one of the things you and I talk about, and I've heard you say publicly, the future of America is multicolored, gender balanced, and a lot of that has to do with Latinos. And in the world of business, I think you use a Wayne Gretzky quote, which is, you got to be to where the puck is going. You got to go where the puck is going, which is a great way to kind of cement that. Can you describe why it is that Latinos are so important to the economy of America and why it is that we're still so freaking blind to it as a country?
Well, I appreciate that question. And as you and I have discussed now for, gosh, going on a couple of decades here,
yeah.
I start by making a statement that I'm very unabashed and unapologetic about, which is that the continued economic competitiveness of the United States relies on the economic empowerment of the Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because when you look at the Latino community and its impact on the workforce, we not only have the highest labor force participation as a cohort, but we will continue because of our demographic, you know, sort of factors of being younger and entering our prime working years. So the workforce. Mm-hmm. Second, when you think of small business in particular, small business creation, which you know quite well, it is Latinos and in particular Latinas driving small business creation. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the work that Sol Trujillo has done on the Latino GDP report, showing us as the drivers of consumer growth in this country. So we're the consumers, we're the small business creators, and we are the labor force participants and many other factors, but with that.
And that GDP is the size of India.
Yes.
I mean, hello. How can you ignore it anymore? And it's well. Anyway, I don't want
to. Absolutely. Now, to your point, I talk a lot about, you know, sports as a business is fundamentally a consumer business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so let's ask ourselves, what does the consumer in America look like? And you're right. I constantly use the quote of Wayne Gretzky, arguably the greatest player in NHL history.
Yep.
Go to where the puck is going.
Mm-hmm.
The puck in America, thus, is going to young, to female, to diverse, and I've already talked about Latino, tech-savvy, and purpose-driven. Being a bridge to those growth cohorts is one of my key value propositions to my business partners for the Coyotes, to my corporate partners, to my media partners. When you think of Maricopa County here in Arizona, where Phoenix is in the middle of, mm-hmm. It's 40% Latino today.
Yeah.
So when people ask me all the time, can I really get Latinos to like hockey? I said, I better. It's the imperative. And for me, yes, I would love to make hockey fans, but really I'm focused on making Coyotes fans, whether it's the sport sells itself, it's getting them in the door. Right. And so, but you ask a question as to why the importance, in particular, the economic importance of Latinos is so overlooked. The short answer is, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know, but I often feel like it's part because I don't think there is a opening of the aperture of seeing Latinos for the multifaceted community that they are.
Javier, the world is lucky to have you. I appreciate you. I really thank you for taking the time, and I look forward to this season.
Absolutely, Javier, and I thank you for having this platform and really highlighting and celebrating not only our community, but just this incredible country that we both are very proud to be a part of.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. For information and links about today's guests, check out the show notes and visit topofthegame-thepod.com. Your host, Javier Sade, the show Top of the Game. Thanks for listening.